As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, yes, welcome to the Standing Room Only podcast. I am Ben Standing and I cover the Washington football team for The Athletic. I appreciate everybody checking out the podcast as always and subscribing and listening and all that good stuff. I'm back for another edition here ahead of week four game at Atlanta. We'll call this bonus content if you want. I spoke with my colleague at The Athletic, Josh Kendall, our Falcons insider, to preview week four, get into what's going on with Matt Ryan, Taylor Heineke reunion. A lot more going on here with this game, which is obviously, look, let's be realistic. I've been saying, I'm hesitant to say that it's a must win, but it's definitely a don't lose kind of a game for the Washington football team at 1-2, considering the opponent. No offense to the Falcons, but they're not exactly considered to be one of the tougher teams in the NFL this year, as well as the upcoming schedule starting next week with the Saints and then the Chiefs coming to FedEx Field and then road games after that. So it is a difficult stretch for Washington beyond this game, but we'll see what happens in this game. As obviously, we kind of know Washington's defense has not exactly been crushing it this year, so this is an opportunity to rebound against a Falcons team that did beat the Giants last week, but at the same point, is definitely on more of a in rebuild mode than the perception we have here, where, you know, expectations are legitimate one way or the other, and obviously it's been Washington has not performed up to expectations of any kind, really, so far this year. But you get a win, you're 2-2, life looks a lot better after 4 weeks. So we'll get into all that here in just a moment, with Josh Kendall, our Falcons insider. You can, of course, read my work, and you can read Josh's work as well, if you're interested, on The Athletic. I have a new article up from Thursday about how Ron Rivera is meeting Matt Ryan on a football field for the 19th time. That's the most that Ron Rivera has met any quarterback in the NFL. And look at that history, but also what that history tells us about what Ron Rivera might be up to from a strategy standpoint. This game, I spoke with former Panthers Pro Bowl linebacker John Beeson. We talked about Matt Ryan, and it's very interesting how things he said about what the Panthers were doing back in the day with Matt Ryan, to me, sounds similar to what we heard a little bit this week from Ron Rivera about Matt Ryan. So check that out. In addition, depending on what time you're listening to this, there should be an article up on the site that I joined with our film insider, Ted Gwynn, our film analyst, I guess it's shared, national film analyst, looking at Washington's defense. So you can check that out over on The Athletic. Now, if you're not a subscriber, but you're listening to this podcast, I have a note for you. I mentioned this in the last podcast, but we are now officially on The Athletic app. You can find the Standard Room Only podcast on The Athletic app. So if you're a subscriber, just look for the podcast and make sure you click it as one of your favorites, and you automatically will get all the episodes that you'll see. If you're not yet a subscriber but have thought about it, it's a great time to do it. You'll get 50% off if you go to theathletic.com/standing. If you're listening to the podcast on The Athletic app is ad-free. Versus here, we've got ads. The boss says, you know, hey, they got to do what they got to do. So keep that in mind. Go to theathletic.com/standig to subscribe to The Athletic. Get 50% off the entire site, not just the podcast. You get everything. That's for a limited time. It'll go into later this month there. All right, so before we get into my conversation with Josh Kendall, I'm talking to you guys late Thursday night into Friday morning. A couple quick things. So Curtis Samuel did practice again on Thursday, second day in a row. Good sign right off the bat, as opposed to the last time when he practiced once and landed on IR soon thereafter. I thought Samuel looked, you know, reasonable, all things considered. You know, he was making some moves in his routes. He dove a couple times for some errant throws, which obviously you don't really want to see diving in practice, no matter what's going on per se. But at the same time, it was good to see that he was willing to, from his body standpoint, that he trusted his body to do it. He seemed to get up with no harm, no foul. But we'll see what happens today, and we'll see if Washington decides they want to activate him from IR ahead of Sunday's game. Obviously, it's obvious that the offense still needs the playmaking that he was signed to deliver. Washington is averaging fewer plays of 20 yards or more than they did last year. One of those big plays, they had two of those plays of over 20 yards last week. One of them, that 73-yard amazing run and catch by Antonio Gibson. Well, I guess we're going to have to see. Antonio Gibson did not practice Thursday. He was out officially with a shin issue. The shin issue, we'll see what that means. If he's not out there today on Friday, then, you know, we've got a story. My sense from what I was told is that he was held out mostly for precautionary reasons and seemingly should be okay. But, you know, we'll have to just wait to see for sure. You wake up, you see how you feel, and you kind of go from there. Defensive tackle Matt Ioannidis was not participating in practice either on Thursday. He obviously missed last week with a knee issue. So something to keep in mind there. Meanwhile, Brandon Scherff did return to practice after missing missing Wednesday with a chest injury. Charles Leno practiced on Thursday as well. So we'll see what goes on there with that. Beyond that, you know, like I said, let's listen to my conversation with Josh to get some insight into the Falcons. You know, like I said, I can't call it a must win. It's too early in the year, but at the same point, whew, boy. And lastly, I will just say, you know, I can't sit here and tell you definitively for sure what's the mood of the locker room. In part, unfortunately, because we're not allowed in the locker room. Before, you used to be able to get some view when we'd be in there for, you know, 30 minutes or so. You used to get some view of, you know, how guys are acting. They're allowed to have fun, right? It's their downtime after practice as well. But you can kind of get a tell, oh, guys loose or guys tight. It doesn't necessarily matter if it's either or somewhere in between, that means it's going to win or lose. I'm just saying you could notice something. And to me, and the players that we spoke to this week, everything felt a little bit more tense. I felt that with J.D. McKissic yesterday on Thursday. He's normally more expansive with his answers. He wasn't this time. I thought Chase Young had a bit more of a serious tone to him as well. So we'll see. And even in the responses from some of the coaches, I think obviously I don't think too many people were pleased with the effort against Buffalo. And just to be clear, I don't mean effort meaning they weren't trying. I just mean, you know, they didn't live up to expectations. The performance wasn't where they wanted to be on either side of the ball. Obviously, the defense had some struggles, to say the least. So we'll see. They may absolutely come out and whoop on Atlanta, and everything will be back to normal, and everybody will feel better about the situation. It's not like the defense isn't getting pressure. Wrote about this earlier in the week. Rayan Walker has a story about this up on The Athletic as well. It's not that they're not getting pressure. It's just not in sync with one another to maximize the opportunities. And there's miscommunication going on in the back seven and so on. So they got a lot of things to clean up. We'll see what they can do. All right, now let's get to it. Here is my conversation with our Falcons insider, Josh Kendall, talking week 4, Matt Ryan, Taylor Heinicke, defenses, 2-1-2 teams, who's going to be 2-2? All right, and right before we get to my conversation with Josh, just a reminder that I had other podcasts this week. Spoke with Scott Jackson, part of the Washington football team radio program on game day. He and I spoke after the Buffalo game. I spoke with our friend Dalton Ross, longtime fan, as well. On Wednesday's episode, the great Rick Doc Walker joined me to break down what is going on with this team. And then a little Wizards talk with Ava Wallace from the Washington Post. That's on Wednesday's show. But for now, let's get to Friday's show. Here's my conversation with our Falcons insider, Josh Kendall, here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, as promised, joining me here to help preview this battle of 1-2 teams on Sunday in Atlanta, he is our Falcons insider, Josh Kendall. Josh, I appreciate the time. This is literally the first time we're talking, so I appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Obviously, it's interesting, right? I mean, I mentioned this to you before we started that, like, one thing I've done with beat writers covering other teams is do a bit where, like, you know, each ask each back and forth a couple of questions we're intrigued by but with the other team. And I was thinking about this and, like, you know, they're both 1-2. So you could look at it like from that perspective and say, oh, you know, same level or whatever. Of course, that's not always the case. The Chiefs are also 1-2 and nobody would put them in the same category as these two teams. No. But even within this group, it, like, I know for Washington, it feels like it's been a bit of a letdown so far. A lot of people had high expectations for the defense. They've underachieved. They won a division last year with a losing record, blah, blah, blah. But some people were projecting higher things. But when I look at Atlanta, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, probably right. Not great, but, like, you know, I know Matt Ryan's still there. So it gives the veneer of being this team, but, like, obviously they were not great last year and I didn't get the sense that expectations were out of hand. So I guess just to start this off, what's the mood there? Is it like, what the hell is happening? Or is it like, okay, well, you know, we weren't expecting heights this year, so we're plugging away.
I think it's layered. On the surface, from 30,000 feet, this is a rebuilding team at its core with some significant issues. So 1-2 is not that big of a problem, especially if you want to be optimistic and look at the slate. You know, they came off of the Giants, where they got that win. They've got Washington, which, you know, again, they're in the same bucket. Then they've got the Jets. So if you're a Falcons fan, you can look and say, all right, we might come out of this above 500. But if you go deeper, it's not just that they lost to Philadelphia in week one. It's that they got embarrassed. And they hired Arthur Smith to fix the offense, to at least make this a fun product on the field while they were getting everything else fixed behind the scenes. And right now they're 29th in the NFL, averaging 16 points a game. Everybody is wondering where the hell Kyle Pitts went. So, you've got these, depending on how hardcore of an Atlanta fan you are, if you just, you know, if you're living in Atlanta and you just remember occasionally that the Falcons are in town, you're okay right now. If you're a real hardcore Falcons fan, then the world is crumbling because you don't have an offense. You think Kyle Pitts is the biggest bust since Tony Mandarich. You know, that's where we are. So in that spectrum.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing. I mean, I know, like, as somebody who does a lot of stuff with the NFL draft, and obviously one of the intriguing questions was, should Atlanta with the fourth pick take what they did, basically Kyle Pitts, who was considered to be a, you know, this phenomenal talent and all that, and it looks like he's
it looks like that's the case. Or should they take a quarterback, knowing that Matt Ryan at his age is getting up there and you don't know how often you're going to be in that spot? And I was sort of the like, well, you know, you can't get rid of Matt Ryan, so you might as well kind of go for it. But then they got rid of Julio Jones, which I guess they had to do for the salary cap reasons and other things. So it feels like they're in this very weird limbo-y spot. They kind of had no choice but to go with Matt Ryan, but they're not also not going to mortgage their future to try to win now. So it is, it feels from the outside like they're in this weird spot, but you have a new coach, and with that comes, you know, time, I guess. So,
I mean, I think that Arthur Smith was not seen as a quarterback dependent offensive guy. I mean, for heaven's sakes, he turned Ryan Tannehill into, you know, a winner in the NFL, which some people at some point thought was not going to happen. So they thought, okay, he can win with Matt Ryan. Let's take a guy that we believe is a generational talent, because it seems like the quarterback that they, you know, would have been willing to go all in for, Trey Lance, was just out of their reach, or just out of the reach that they wanted to go. What I said about Kyle Pitts being a bust, that comes from sort of the lunatic fringe of the fan base. There is no thought in this building that I'm in, or technically the one that I'm looking at through the window over there, that Kyle Pitts is a bust. They love Kyle Pitts. They love everything about Kyle Pitts. They will tell you, you know, they'll take you down the line and tell you why Kyle Pitts hasn't gotten more touches and why he will in the future get more touches. So they still feel good about the Pitts pick. They think Pitts is going to be around for a while. And they think that Matt Ryan thinks, he said today, you know, that he can be very good in this offense. So nobody inside the building is panicking. NFL fans being NFL fans, some of them are panicking.
Prediction. Kyle Pitts gets the ball a lot this week. Washington linebackers struggle in coverage, and I think this is, if I'm Atlanta, that's exactly where I'm going. I would think he would be heavily involved, but that's just my guess. All right, your turn. You're allowed to ask me whatever you got about Washington. You can, whatever you got, I'm all in.
Well, you know, just from a human interest standpoint, Heinicke coming back home to a place where, you know, he was at Collins Hill High School when Matt Ryan was just down the road as the NFL quarterback. That's an interesting dynamic to me. How much of does that, you think, mean to Heinicke? Obviously, at 1 p.m. or 1:05 p.m., it doesn't matter. But coming into the game, how much do you think it means to Heinicke?
So I actually asked him today. We're talking on Wednesday. You and I are talking Wednesday early evening. So today Heinicke spoke to the media, and I said, hey, you know, obviously you grew up in Atlanta, Matt Ryan was playing, did you ever have a chance to, you know, I'm sure you watched him play a lot, did you ever have a chance to meet him at some point or whatever? He said no, they never met. He also said that even though he grew up there, his dad was a Packers fan, so that was his team, and he liked Favre and Rodgers. And it actually makes a lot of sense, especially the Favre part, because Heinicke's game is much more the gunslinger version, like a Brett Favre, whereas Matt Ryan is, he feels like it's the more of the prototype, you know, coming off the factory,
yes,
tall quarterback, arm, pocket presence that every coach would say, yeah, sign me up for that. So yeah, there's clearly no, there's no comparison between Heinicke and Ryan from a style. He said that his first start ever a couple years ago was against Atlanta, and Matt Ryan said some nice things about him then. So, you know, I think he's intrigued from that perspective. But yeah, I mean, obviously Heinicke coming home is an interesting angle for sure. And I know you are transitioning to Atlanta and all that, but like, is there a buzz to any degree, whether it's about Heinicke this week or just the idea that this guy from that area has started to become a thing?
Yeah, there's not a ton of buzz. I think that they would root for him as sort of a metro Atlanta guy. Collins Hill is in Gwinnett County, which in some ways is his own universe outside the perimeter of Atlanta. So while he's an Atlanta kid, he's not an inside the perimeter guy. So there's not, I think, any real strong connection between the core, the geographic core of what the Falcons fans are and that Gwinnett County group. So I don't think that it's a big storyline among Falcons people. I just wondered from Heinicke's perspective, you know, it's got to be cool to some degree.
Oh yeah. I mean, he said he's, you know, the ticket requests are coming in. It's definitely going to be a deal, his trainer. I wrote a story last week about how he spent the offseason trying to get ready for this season, because his injuries have always been part of his unfortunate journey so far through the NFL, and his training staff, guys based in Atlanta, were helping him out and what they were kind of focusing on. So it's a homecoming on a lot of different levels. It's obviously a big deal, you know, and like, look, he's only, you know, a handful of starts is, you know, that's where he's at right now. Coming, and he's also coming off his worst performance since he got here, which is, you know, not going to judge him off the one performance, but it was the worst one. If he has another one where he throws a couple picks and looks shaky, then other questions start to come up. But we'll think positive for
sure,
for everybody. Absolutely. for everybody involved. Let me go back to you and ask this. So we talked about Matt Ryan to a degree, but so Matt Ryan has been around for a long time, former MVP. You know, he, again, the sort of the prototype pocket quarterback, but in sort of looking at a couple things quickly here early in the week, you know, it looks like a guy who, in my head, I'm thinking throwing the ball down the field. This is like, you know, this is what he could do. That it's now not that same guy. The perception that that's the case is not the deal. That his, I think it's like his yards per attempt is pretty low. I'm not exactly sure where it ranks in the league, but pretty shockingly low. And just sort of talking to a couple people, the sense I got was, yeah, he'll kill you underneath, but down the field is not really where he's at. What's your sense of what Matt Ryan, because obviously, and to that point, Washington's defense has struggled. The pass rush has not been able to be what they were hoping completely. They're getting some pressure, but they're not in coordination to actually work together to get him down. And they're going to have to take Matt Ryan down because he'll pick him apart underneath. But what's your sense of that? Is it more that he is a little bit more underneath relative to what he's probably been throughout his career?
So far, for sure, his air yardage is per attempt is the lowest of his career so far. That is not a function of physical ability. He's still capable of doing that. That's a function of what this system is asking him to do. And we talked about him being sort of the prototype off the factory quarterback. Part of that is this sort of very cerebral, almost robotic approach to the game. He talks about making really ordinary plays over and over and over. So defenses have done a lot on the back end to cover up Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley and not to get beat deep. And Matt Ryan is going to take the check down 100 out of 100 times when the numbers say take the check down. He is not going to get frustrated. He's not going to get bored. He's not going to think, I got to try one just to try one. He'll just take the check down all day long. As a Falcons fan, it's maddening for them sometimes. As an offensive coordinator and a head coach who's essentially the offensive coordinator, that's exactly what they're asking him to do, and he's just going to keep on doing it. They think, although they have not proven yet, that they can beat teams just taking the check down all day long, taking Mike Davis and Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, throwing Lee Smith a touchdown every now and then, that they can get detailed and consistent enough to do that well enough to beat teams if that's all teams are going to give them. It hasn't really happened except for the Giants last week. So we'll see.
All right. Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously the new coach, he's got to win, wants to be competitive as much now, but he's also implementing a system, and you can't just, I mean, there's something to be said for coaching to your talent. What do we do here? How do we make this successful as possible while simultaneously going, well, this quarterback is 100 years old and this isn't necessarily the future. So I maybe need to incorporate what I want to do more than just cater to this guy. So it's an interesting spot. All right. I won't, since I'm not going to keep you long so you can get back to work, I'll give you, you got your last, or ask me as many as you want, but I'll give you your last question back to me about anything going on this end.
So from the Atlanta side, the offense has not been what anybody thought it would be, but the coaching staff keeps saying, we're close, we're close, we're close, we're getting there. I sense the same thing defensively for the Redskins. Do they look close defensively? Do they look like they're about to be that defensive monster that folks thought they might be? Or do they look like further away than they're telling you they are? Because I know Ron Rivera at his heart is kind of an Arthur Smith optimist type of guy. You know, we're getting there, we're getting there, we're getting there, maybe.
You have it pegged exactly right. Rivera keeps saying that Washington is close, but he talks about things like maturity. He talks about that, you know, like basically how like last year is not relevant to this year, that you got to, you know, Cole Holcomb today, the starting linebacker, talked about how the idea that Rivera says is like every year you start at the bottom of the mountain, right? And that they need to understand that they're that some guys are sort of getting out of their proper technique, that, you know, they're not staying within the system. I mentioned the coordination within the defensive line, that some guys are just not they're just, you know, you can't just try to beat your own guy off the pass rush. You have to do it within concert with the other people. Right. So to that end, they're saying they're close. Look, it's hard to say. Obviously, there's a lot of talent, particularly on the defensive line. But last year, I just thought that they were a bit not overrated, but like, I think people were like calling them an elite defense when they really were not there yet. A lot of intrigue, a lot of promise, but I don't, people have heard me talk about this 100 times, that the schedule and backup quarterbacks and other things worked to their favor last year. And then obviously we haven't seen it yet this year. So it gets, it's easy to say that they're close, and they may be right. Ron Rivera is going to have a lot better feel for it than me or anybody else on the outside, but it doesn't look that way yet. You know, that said, they played Justin Herbert week one. They played Josh Allen this week, but they also played Daniel Jones in the middle. And I think Daniel Jones is, you know, I've been more of a fan of Daniel Jones than others, but he looked pretty good too. So, you know, Matt Ryan's another good quarterback. It doesn't get any easier, but maybe. Like, I wouldn't be overly, like last week I was thinking Buffalo would win and probably cover because I figured Josh Allen was more likely to break out than the defense. I don't necessarily know if I feel the same way this week because Atlanta is not as good as Buffalo, of course. But the defense is going to have to do better, where Matt Ryan could look really good.
Right. So I think we're in a position where that's the most intriguing matchup to me, is which of those groups takes that step that they've been saying they're going to take. And that probably determines the outcome Sunday afternoon.
Right. Right. For sure. All right, I'll ask the last question of you. So in terms of just, we mentioned Taylor Heinicke, look, the guy, you know, he's scrappy. There's certain things he can do. He's good on the run, to whether it's actually running, as he had a diving touchdown last week, or just simply getting out of the pocket. I feel like that's where he's best. He doesn't have the strongest arm in the world, and when he can roll outside and throw towards the sideline, he can do some good things. But we saw when he stays in the pocket and then throws late, he doesn't have the arm strength to get it done. But I guess the question, though, is Buffalo's defense is really good. Atlanta's defense, where can Heinicke, I guess, in Washington take advantage of Atlanta's defense, and where is the scary part that he could get into some trouble with?
Well, I think if they watch the Eagles tape, they'll be very, you know, they'll see a ton of stuff that they can do, because Jalen Hurts looked like Steve Young doing a lot of those same things. I mean, running more zone read than the Redskins probably are going to run, but getting Hurts outside of the pocket, cutting the field in half, giving him easy throws. He made a ton of them. He rushed for a bunch of yards, and it was bad. That defense has made progress. They showed that against Daniel Jones, who is also himself an athletic and a mobile guy. They kept him hemmed up. They're going to pressure. They say a lot of the same things about coordinating that pressure, and the coordination has to be good or it looks really bad. They made steps against the Giants. They're going to play zone behind it. There is nothing tremendously scary about this Atlanta defense. They have shown the willingness to, and I think they're going to have to, run some pressure stuff up front, play zone behind it, and just catch everything in front of them. And if they have to do that down to the red zone and then try to force a field goal, they'll do that. This is not a team that's going to beat you with its defense. And I think that they have they look almost like they have accepted that fact, and they're just going to play within the scheme. So I could see, the Redskins, like the Giants did, especially early, you know, making a lot of progress in the first 80 yards of the field. Then it's a matter of who makes those handful of plays when you get in the red zone.
Awesome. Before Sunday, if you start writing stuff, it is a challenge for everybody with the name. So make sure you use the football team if you're having to write anything.
Oh, did I say Redskins?
It's all good. Everybody, it's, especially when you don't have to ever deal with it. you know, it slips out. Everybody does it, especially those of us of a certain age. You know, it is what it is.
You're right. I'm going to write it like four times in my game story, Redskin. Somebody's going to, I'm going to have to search and replace it when I'm done.
All good. Beyond that, anything, any specific articles you have out this week that give people want to, who subscribe to The Athletic, want to get a better feel for what's going on at the Falcons that they should keep it, should go take a look at?
Well, tomorrow I'm writing sort of about Arthur Smith versus fantasy football owners. He's made a comment about how he's never been a big, the fantasy people have never been a big fan of his, and they're certainly not now because of the Kyle Pitts situation. So he talks about that. I talked to some of our fantasy people about, you know, the consternation in the fantasy football world that Kyle Pitts is not doing anything, that Calvin Ridley's not doing anything, kind of as a way to get into the idea of why isn't the number four overall pick more involved in the offense.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we'll take a look at that. Josh, I really appreciate the time. Welcome to the Athletics NFL team, and good luck. I will see you there on Sunday. I'm excited for the trip. The Atlanta press box, as assuming it hasn't changed since I was there last, amazing spread, which is really all any of us in the media care about. So
food's pretty good. They've got the ice cream machine is working again, so we're good to go.
Oh, okay.
Soft serve machine.
Now we're good. Yeah. All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Many thanks to Josh Kendall for his time, and thanks to everybody here for checking out the podcast. Again, a reminder, if you're not yet a subscriber, you can by going to theathletic.com/standig. If you subscribe, you get this podcast and the entire Athletic for 50% off the annual subscription rate. So go check that out. That's it for now. Ben Standig signing off. Until next time, see ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.